Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
The journey to a smoke-free future can be a long and winding road. But if you're ready for a change, consider taking Zyn for a spin. Zyn nicotine pouches offer a fresh way to discover your nicotine satisfaction. Anywhere, anytime. No smoke, no spit, and no lingering odor. Get in gear with the Zyn 10 Challenge and enjoy 10 smoke-free, spit-free days for just $5.95. Order online and start your new journey today. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
School of Humans.
On October 17th, 1980, just after 10 a.m., the body of Gail Vaught was found in Washington County, Arkansas, near an area called Lake Weddington. Gail was just 21 years old. She worked with mostly male colleagues on a road crew building Highway 71 in Fayetteville. Gail was wearing a flannel shirt and a blue Michelin jacket. I know I mentioned this last week, and I'm mentioning it again because what Gail was wearing and the order that everything happened in will become crucial in this murder investigation. Gail's legs were open. She was naked from the waist down, except for a pair of torn and filthy white socks. Last week, we explored three main theories. One, that Gail's murder could have been connected to drug dealing, to some kind of Ozark mafia, or possibly to a drug dealer who was trying to send a message to her boyfriend, Ray Foreman, by targeting Gail. The second theory was that Gail was the victim of domestic violence, that on Thursday night, something happened between Gail's boyfriend, Ray, and Gail, something that spiraled out of control and ended with her dead. The third was that someone else, someone the police overlooked, maybe even a stranger, raped and killed Gail. One of the main questions we talked about last week was the condom, the brand Tickled Fancy that was found near Gail's body. A lot of people have wondered if Gail was actually sexually assaulted or if that condom was a red herring, if it could have come from someone else, maybe some teenagers who use that area for parking. This week, we're going to do a deep dive into the Gail Vaught case and see if we can answer the question of what really happened to her in those woods on October 17th, 1980. I'm Katherine Townsend. For the past 5 years of working on my true crime podcast, Hell and Gone, I've learned that there is no such thing as a small town where murder never happens. If you have a case you'd like me to look into, you can reach out to us at our Hell and Gone murder line at 678-744-6145. That's 678-744-6145. This is Hell and Gone Murderline.
We've
been looking at the Gail Vaught case file. We filed a FOIA request. We wanted to understand more about each of these three theories. So our research assistant, Amy, reached out to Gail's sister, Teresa. As we said last week, Teresa has been working with a private investigator named Marty for the past few years. And Marty was the person who first talked to me about this case. Teresa and her sister Gail both came from the small town of Mountainburg. Even though Gail's parents have passed away, Teresa has still not given up hope she might be able to find answers and one day to understand what happened to her sister.
She went to a 2-year college and played basketball. She was really big into sports. She didn't have a lot of boyfriends, but she had a lot of guy friends. You know, she hung out more with me guys as friends than she did girls. And I think it was because she was so tall. You know, she was like 6'1", but she had a very outgoing personality, made friends easily. She was a free spirit, but she was kind. You know, she lived in Fayetteville, and I live between Van Buren and Alma in Crawford County. And she used to be at our house all the time, but, you know, she had just kind of, once she moved up here to Fayetteville, she kind of found a different circle of friends. I always felt like her friends were the friends that if Gail wasn't their friend, they wouldn't have any friends. She was just kind to everybody, but, you know, most of her friends were not the most outstanding people. But, you know, they needed a friend, and that was her.
Like pretty much everyone who talked to us about Gail, Teresa told us about what a nice and wonderful person her sister was. However, she did say that because Gail was so nice, sometimes Gail would befriend people who it seems like Teresa believed might not have been the best influences on Gail. Teresa said she didn't know Ray Foreman, Gail's boyfriend, that well.
She was dating a guy by the name of Ray Foreman at the time. He had been at the house a couple of times, and the last time was probably about 2 weeks before she was murdered. And they had picked up my son, which he was 3 at the time, and took him to the Fort Smith Fair. It was kind of late when they got home, and I offered them, because it's Saturday night, you know, just go ahead and spend the night and then go back the next morning. And it was like, oh, no, Ray's got to work, you know, this kind of stuff. But he was a nice-looking man, but he was very quiet, you know. And that just may have been his personality. I don't know. Never any mention of any kind of issues or problems, but we didn't speak very often, you know. Back then, we didn't have cell phones.
We talked last week about the fact that there have been allegations of domestic violence with Ray and his ex-wife, Lynn. Ray split up with Lynn a few months before he started dating Gail. Teresa said that to her knowledge, Gail and Ray were very happy and she was not aware of any problems in their relationship or any domestic violence. Teresa talked about her frustration with the police investigation. And I really sympathize with this, by the way, because listeners of this podcast know that so many of the cases that we cover, we see the same pattern. The story of what happened to Gail has changed over the years. It seemed like to Teresa there was information that was being added and being taken away. After a while, she said she really wasn't sure what to believe.
The story changes with the police on what time of the time period you're talking about.
As an example of what Teresa defined as this changing story, she said that early in the investigation, one of the deputies who was at the crime scene told her they found white chipped paint near Gail's body. But there's nothing in the record about that. There's nothing about white paint chips. Later, there was a rumor about orange paint chips being found near the body. That's nowhere in the official record either. Teresa also talked about Ray Foreman's alibi.
The police told us that Ray had gone to a party with about 30 people and that he had a lot of alibis. But as time has gone past from the police, it has changed to where he was out running around doing kind of dope deals.
Teresa also discussed something that I mentioned in last week's episode. She talked about Ray's alibi and about that weird alarm clock story. Remember, Ray said he was out all night with his friend Jody, someone who we know Gail did not like. He claimed that he borrowed her Jeep and that she just allowed him to do that. And as I said last week, I do find that unbelievable. Everyone who knew Gail said she never gave her car to anyone. She didn't want to walk. She was always the one to drive her vehicle. So the idea that she would give her vehicle to her boyfriend to allow him to go out and make drug deals and just be fine with that, knowing she had to go pick her paycheck up the next morning, seems very unlikely. But that is his story. The next morning, he drove Jody home, and then he drove back to the apartment that he shared with Gail, and he still had her Jeep. Ray claimed that he parked the Jeep, and he said that he got into his own truck. He got into his vehicle and slept there. This was very odd, and he said something else that was odd. He said that he saw an alarm clock on the dashboard of his truck and that the truck door was a little bit ajar. Teresa called out the weirdness of this story.
There's something in there about an alarm clock that he decided Gail was mad at him and put it in his truck. But the bottom line is, you know, on a Thursday night where all of this stuff happened, I can't feel like that was a coincidence.
Again, this is another question we need to answer. We need to figure out exactly what Ray was talking about. We need to know if he meant that it was some kind of a clock that was in the truck or if it was an actual alarm clock that got put out there, because that was bizarre. What if Ray slept in the truck, not just because he was hungover, but because he did not want to go in that house and face Gail? What if while he was sleeping, she walked out of the house, and that's why she had no shoes on? She approached him in the truck, and they got into a knockdown, drag-out argument right there. I'm going to come back to that later. For now, let's go through the rest of Ray's alibi. Amy and I discussed the fact that right before Gail left home, she was preparing dinner. According to Teresa, Gail was cooking beans and cornbread.
She had started cooking beans and cornbread and stuff, and then somebody turned the stove off, and they weren't completely cooked.
We looked at the autopsy report, and there weren't any stomach contents listed. I don't know if that's because of Gail's injuries or if it was something that just wasn't noted, but it would have been great to know if any food was in her stomach at that time. Teresa said that she believed Ray had something to do with Gail's murder. She said that she believed that something started that night before Ray left the house, something that potentially set him off. Which brings us to another mystery in the case, because remember, Gail was found wearing only a pair of socks. The socks were dirty on the bottom, and they had holes in them. And police said they never did find Gail's shoes. Now, Teresa believes that that means Gail was kidnapped from her apartment, possibly at gunpoint.
You know, I'm just surmising from every little bit of piece I've got. I can't say for sure that I felt like that he, Ray, killed her, but I feel in my heart that he knew that it was going to happen. And that he didn't do anything to stop it. But, you know, he may have been part of it. I don't know. But I do have that feeling that he knew what was going on and he trapped her in her apartment. You know, if he didn't do it, then he helped set her up to where it happened.
I'm sorry. I know that has to be difficult to hear.
Well, you know, I've lived with it for, you know, decades. And, you know, it's kind of like you get numb to stuff. That's why criminals can be so evil, is because they're so used to seeing it. And I was a nurse, so, you know, I've kind of hardened to a lot of that. So it's fine. You know, if this is going to find closure, it's not a big deal.
Hey, y'all, it's Catherine. As you know from Helen Gone, crime can happen to anyone at any time. When it comes to home security, your best line of defense is your vigilance and preparation. That's why I recommend SimpliSafe Home Security. Obviously, we cannot control everything that happens out there in the world, but when I'm in my own home, I feel very reassured by the fact that I have a home security system. And SimpliSafe is affordable, easy to use, and crucially, it's easy to get started with and then build on later as you need more functionality. They have a huge variety of indoor and outdoor cameras. It's backed by 24/7 professional monitoring for less than $1 a day, with no contracts and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Get 20% off any new SimpliSafe system when you sign up for Fast Protect monitoring. Just visit simplisafe.com/helengone.
That's simplysafe.com/HelenGone. There's no safe like SimpliSafe.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
One of the theories we're exploring is the idea this could have been connected to drug dealing. So we need to know how big, how serious a drug user was Gail, and how big a drug dealer was her boyfriend, Ray. Teresa clarified that. She said her sister did smoke pot quite a bit. She said she did marijuana and did acid occasionally. This was pretty much the same thing that we heard from Gail's friends. Gail was not involved in heavy drugs or heavy drug dealing. The sheriff of Washington County at the time of Gail's murder was a man named Herb Marshall. Even though Herb left office shortly after Gail's body was found, he has always said this is a case that has stayed with him and that he wishes he could have gotten justice for Gail and for her family. A few years ago, Sheriff Marshall told Marty, the private investigator who first brought us the case, that he, Herb, believed that Gail was kidnapped from her home. I wanted to know if he still felt that way. Herb is now in his 80s. He admits that his memory is not what it once was. And on top of that, he's been having some serious health issues. But he still wants to help us in any way that he can. He wants to figure out what happened to Gail Vaught. It's clear that the idea of this unsolved murder in his county has tormented him over the years.
I just got out of the hospital a week ago, and mentally I'm not in all that great a shape, but I'll do what I can for you.
Herb said he believed in his gut that Ray had something to do with Gail's death. He also said he believed she had been forced out of her home, possibly at gunpoint. Herb said he believed this based on the fact there was the food on the stove that Teresa mentioned and that there was food in the oven. This made police believe that Gail's time of death happened sometime late on Thursday night. The former sheriff, Herb Marshall, explained what actually killed Gail. And we weren't wrong. Her death was horrific.
They made it try to look like it was a rape, which it wasn't, at the crime scene. And actually, what killed her, she had a bullet hole right behind her, right ear, I believe. It's a .22 caliber, which hit that bone and knocked her unconscious. But whoever shot her thought they'd kill her.
Gail had been shot in the head with a .22 caliber bullet. But the bullet fragmented in her skull, and so it did not penetrate her brain. So this was not a fatal wound. Sometime during all this, Gail's killer took off her jeans and underwear. We know, based on the fecal matter that was in her underwear, that she was dead or dying when this was done. And then at some point during this horrific sexual assault, her killer realized that Gail was not dead.
She apparently was standing in the back behind the Jeep when the Jeep backed over her. Said what killed her was she bled to death internally from her spleen. The spleen or some portion of it in her. And she actually bled to death internally.
So the killer got in his vehicle and backed over her. When the vehicle backed over her, it caused catastrophic injuries to her pelvis, a lot of her internal organs. Basically, the car tore apart the bottom half of her body and led to her bleeding to death in the woods alone. It's one of the most horrific murders I've ever read about. Herb said he was focused on Ray because mainly of the drug dealing and the bad associations he had with him. He said he believed that when he talked to Ray, Ray was on the cusp of confessing to something.
In my mind, I had him at one time.
He couldn't answer the question of what the motive would have been.
I'm not quite sure. It could have been a half a dozen things. It could have been drugs because he had her on some drugs. He was a druggie himself.
I know that smoking pot was a much bigger deal, especially in Arkansas in 1980. But so far, I haven't seen anything other than some bragging that happened years later by a couple of guys who were in jail and might have had their own reasons for wanting to seem like dangerous drug dealers. I haven't seen any evidence of any type of drug dealing connected to Gail's death. But police did think the murder might have something to do with drugs, so let's explore that. Again, was Ray really this big-time drug dealer? Amy did some research into pills because we were wondering, why were there 17,000 pills being confiscated from these guys? It turns out that back in the day, these pills, these very strong caffeine pills, were kind of the equivalent of selling Adderall. And sometimes, dealers would come up with more creative ways to get people high, including sometimes melting the pills down into a liquid and injecting them into the bloodstream. I don't actually know if injecting speed with an IV would make it hit your bloodstream faster. I don't know what kind of effects that would have, but I can imagine those caffeine pills and those quantities would make people act crazy. But at the same time, even in those quantities, this doesn't point to Ray or his cohorts being these big-time drug dealers. Caffeine pills and marijuana are both legal today, and even though this was a long time ago, again, I'm not really buying into the drug dealer theory, at least not with the evidence that we've seen so far. We asked Herb if there was anyone left alive since Ray and Randy have both passed away. He said we should talk to Jody, Ray's friend.
I'll tell you, there's one living person that knows for sure, and that person won't talk to me at all. Jody is still alive. He should be in his late 70s. But the last I heard, he was still alive.
We need to find Jody.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, The Apollo Gym murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune into what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So if Ray did kill Gail, why did he do it? We were trying to find out if there had been anyone else in Gail's life who might have seen signs of domestic violence. Let's go back to the evidence. Even though a lot of the case file pages are missing, we know where Gail's work site was. We know where she lived in the trailer court in the basement apartment she shared with Ray that was owned by Ray's friend, Barry Frizzell. We know that at 8 p.m. on October 17th, Gail talked to one of her supervisors at work. We know that she confirmed that they were not going to work the next day because of all the heavy rain they'd been having. But she told Joe she planned on coming up to pick up her paycheck on Friday morning. That conversation with Joe was the last known conversation that Gail ever had with anyone except her killer. Amy talked to Barry Frizzell's brother. His name is Ted, and he said he knew Gail well. He said he hung around Gail and Ray during their relationship, and he insists there was no violence in their relationship. He said that Ray adored Gail. Ted said he didn't mind sharing information, but he said he prefers not to be on the podcast, which obviously is fine. But he did want to share his theory about what may have happened to Gail Vaught. He said he has a suspect in mind. He believes Ray's ex-wife, Lynn, may have played a role in Gail's death. Gail never told anyone that Ray abused her. But we do know from the case file that Gail did make a comment at one point about being afraid of Ray because of what Ray had allegedly done to his ex-wife. And to figure out what happened to her, we need to figure out the actual time of death. So, again, we come back to the crime scene and back to the evidence. And it strikes me that this case, more than anyone I've seen in a long time, has so much evidence that appears to be contradictory. So, we really have to zero in and look at Gail's pattern of life. One of what I consider the biggest breakthroughs of this case is when we looked at the autopsy report and we figured out that the time of death is almost certainly wrong. Dr. Fahmy Malik, the medical examiner, did his forensic testing at 11:30 a.m. on October 17, 1980. Now, initially, he said he believed that based on the forensics, that Gail had been dead between 6 and 10 hours. That would put the time of death sometime between 1:30 and 5:30 a.m. But elsewhere in the autopsy report, Dr. Malik indicated the time of death had been before midnight. This more closely aligns to what the police believed. They believed that Gail was killed that night, that she had been making dinner at home and that she was either kidnapped from her home or something bad happened to her. Something started in the home and went out to the woods. But the evidence contradicts this because, first, there's the fact that, according to the autopsy report, rigor mortis had just started in Gail's face. It had not yet moved down her body, which would indicate that she had only been dead for a few hours. Let's go back to the tire tracks. Remember, it rained really hard the night before. It was actually pouring torrentially at 2 a.m. But according to the autopsy report, Gail's hair and her clothes were described as wet but not saturated. And then there were the fresh tire tracks. They had a lot of detail in them. If Gail had been killed prior to this torrential rain, the tire tracks would have been obliterated in all that mud. Every single factor we look at points to the fact that Gail's time of death was much later than the police believe. I believe that it was on Friday morning. Then we go back again to the condom. One of the biggest questions we've had in this case was the condom a red herring? Was it left over from another couple hooking up in the woods? Or could Gail's killer have planted it there? Did they want to make it look like this was a rape and murder and that that had been the motive? As we said last week, forensic testing on Gail's body revealed the possible presence of semen in Gail's vagina. But when swabs from Gail's vagina were tested, they tested negative for sperm. We explained the discrepancy. We said that the semen could have been from consensual sex she had with Ray on Wednesday night. The fact that Gail's jeans and underwear were removed make it, in my opinion, less likely that the condom was completely irrelevant. That seems like a big coincidence. However, tragically, somewhere between the Arkansas State Crime Lab and Washington County, the condom was lost years ago, so there's no way to test it for DNA now. So, did Gail's killer stage a crime scene? Did he try to frame someone? I think the framing theory is becoming more and more unlikely. People who are discussing that and making comments online about it are, for the most part, looking at this case with a modern-day CSI Dick Wolf savvy lens. And we have to remember that this was 1980. CSI did not exist. People were not watching Dick Wolf shows. DNA was not even a remote possibility. No one had ever heard of it. And we have to also ask ourselves, who was using condoms in the Arkansas Ozarks back then? This was also pre-AIDS. So men who were past their teenage years, in their mid and late 20s, in that age group, those guys who were in relationships tended not to use condoms that much. There were some exceptions. There are a few groups of people who, in my investigative experience on cold cases and as a PI who's done a lot of marital surveillance, men who cheat carry condoms. Those are the guys who carry boxes of condoms in their car, often in the glove compartment. So now we need to take a look at the third theory. We've talked about domestic violence. We've talked about drug dealing. What about the possibility that a stranger sexually assaulted and murdered Gail? Which brings us back to the man who said that he saw Gail hitchhiking. Laith Lane, a 29-year-old who was driving his wife to work at around 6:15 a.m. on the morning of October 17th. The officer who interviewed Laith Lane noted that he was acting strangely during the interview, acting nervous. And in fact, the officer wrote that Laith's behavior was so unusual that he said he wanted to check the FBI background details on this person. Remember that Laith said that on the morning of October 17th, he was on the road driving his wife to work by 6:15 a.m. Later, though, in another interview, he told a slightly different story. He said that he dropped his children off at daycare. He said he saw Gail on the hill by the Fayetteville Mall. And then when we talked to Teresa, she dropped another bombshell. She said that around midnight or a little after, in the early morning hours of October 17th, that someone else had supposedly seen Gail hitchhiking. This person was a police officer.
She was seen out on one of the highways by some Farmington police officer, something about midnight, and it was raining, and he should have stopped, and he didn't. I have been talking to different, state police, different deputies from Fayetteville, you know, whoever Marty could find me to talk to. And nobody ever told me that case was closed until about maybe a year ago. Mm-hmm. And I've been talking to them since 2013. And then all of a sudden, the case closed. they said it, if new evidence came, then they'd reopen it. Well, what they said is that they believe Ray Foreman did it, and there's just no way to prove it. So in their minds, they've already solved it, you know, with no evidence.
There are so many more questions we still need answered. We need to know more about who was involved in the drug scene and that friend group. We need to know more about the relationship between Ray and Gail. We need to figure out what happened on the morning of October 17th, 1980, because that's the crucial time period. What happened at Gail and Ray's apartment after he came home that morning? And what, if anything, set her out on that path walking along the highway? And who might have picked her up along that dark highway? To get the answers, I may have to go back into those woods. I'm Katherine Townsend. This is Hell and Gone Murderline. Hell and Gone Murderline is a production of School of Humans and iHeart Podcasts. It's written and narrated by me, Katherine Townsend, and produced by Gabby Watts. Music contributed by Ben Salee. Executive producers are Virginia Prescott, Brandon Barr, and Elsie Crowley. If you have a case you'd like me to look into, you can reach out to us at our Hell and Gone Murder line at 678-744-6145. That's 678-744-6145.
School of Humans.
With everything you have on your plate, earning your degree online seems impossible. But at Grand Canyon University, we specialize in helping you fit a master's degree in business into your busy day. Your graduation team, led by your own GCU counselor, provides you with the personal support you need to succeed. Achieve your goals with a plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune into what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.